Hey everyone, this is Pat Harris. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to be doing a series of interviews with the Forgotten Prophets about our upcoming release, The Empress. The Empress is a 45-minute through-composed piece, and it features Chris Bell on guitar, Johnny Gear on piano, Aaron Lack on the vibraphone, Steve Schwelling on drums, and myself on the electric upright bass. It was a tremendous experience putting it all together, and the goal of this is really to just sort of let everyone else in on the behind-the-scenes creative process that we go through as artists. If you'd like further information about where we are in the album-making process, or to order the album as a pre-order, or once it comes out, you can get all of that information on our website, and that is www.theforgottenprophets.com. Hope you enjoy the interviews. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. This is Pat Harris. I am here with Chris Bell. We are drinking some delicious Third Coast coffee, the Ethiopia Sadama Natural. It's a heck of a brew, and Chris, thank you for being here today.
Happy to do it, Pat.
Chris played guitar on the latest Forgotten Prophets release titled The Empress. We are still currently, as of this interview's time, in the mixing phase of that. But I'm really grateful that Chris was able to come over to the house today to give us some of his insights into not only the recording process and his performance, to be quite renowned as a luthier, both in Austin and on the national scene. Chris, can you tell us just a quick little backstory about how you got into luthery to begin with?
Sure. I mean, really, it was a happy accident. I had an opportunity to meet and then work with Tom Ellis, who is a fantastic mandolin builder here in Austin. Ellis Mandolins, if you're at all hip to those guys, you know that their stuff is absolutely amazing. And all the people that work for Tom are wonderful, and I really learned a tremendous amount. And it was just one of those things, like when I first stumbled on playing guitar in high school, that I really just got the building bug.
Yeah.
And I've married that now to my philosophy with playing and sound. So it's really been, it's great. In some ways, it's sort of helped me realize my own musical voice.
Sure.
And what's important to me.
Well, I was just going to ask,
yeah.
Because it seems from the time that you sort of went down this route of building your own instruments, not only for yourself, but for other players, that as far as your perspective on it, it seems to be really holistic, or it's in a sense, you are solving a problem by making your own guitars that you had, and that sort of spills over into other realms or other issues, like by addressing. No, I don't want to say I don't want to knock any other instruments, but through the shortcomings of, like, you weren't able to achieve what you wanted, so you basically went out and figured out how to do it yourself.
Yeah, and well, you know, and again, a lot of that information I have to say that I got from Tom, but spending that time at Ellis Mandolins and talking with the builders there and talking with Tom, and then thinking about my gig schedule and issues that I, you know, come across on the bandstand about my sound, things started to kind of
come into focus,
I guess. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's for me, being a fan of kind of roots music, right? Mm-hmm. Blues and jazz and stuff like that, that also informs my building and my approach to sound and what I think is important in terms of how the guitar should sound, both like just alone or in the ensemble.
Yeah, I think it's great. And if I can piggyback on this notion of you playing your own instruments, The Empress, which we just recorded with the Forgotten Prophets, mm-hmm. It's currently in the mixing phase, is the second recording that you and I have been on together where you are playing exclusively your instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what strikes me is sort of the range in tone and style that you're able to achieve essentially on one guitar. And I'm remembering it now in that we recorded The End, our album The End, in August of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And to my knowledge, you played primarily your your sort of your version of a Telecaster.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
And which, and that was about as rock and roll of an album as they come, was mm-hmm. the end. And then we just tracked the Empress in July of 2017. And yet every time I look over, you've still got the telly in your hand.
I know.
But at the same time, and we're doing something that's very different from the roots rock of the previous album. And yet somehow that telly sound and in your hands still seems to be a great sonic and performance choice.
Yeah. I mean, well, thank you. And man, I mean, hats off to Leo Fender, right? I mean, yeah. he certainly had a thing there. But yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what to say. It's like, I guess I've been playing guitar for 25 years. And so I have a real specific idea of what my needs are. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get hired, like I just said, I
sure.
play jazz and blues and kind of roots music. And so, you know, the demands on my guitar playing, you know, are such that, man, that Telecaster really, really sounds amazing.
It does. You know? It seems to sit really beautifully in an ensemble.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's, here's an analogy. So I have a really good friend who's a great chef and I think that you can apply this line of logic to both cooking and making guitars, is that it's not one particular thing. Like when you're, you know, making a dish, it's, you know, my buddy who's the great chef doesn't make one move and his dish is 10 times better than yours. It's every step of the way he one-ups right. you on when he cooks the onions. He one-ups you when he, you know, cooks the green peppers. He one-ups you. And so by the end of the dish, right, we've got this dish that's
pretty significant.
That's right. Exponentially better. And I think that's the situation with the Telecaster. What's funny is that this guitar, I didn't actually just make the guitar. This guitar is funny. It's gone through a process very similar to that. So I've like tinkered with my ideas about sound and about playing on this one particular instrument. And I really feel like I've got a combination now of like string gauge and the action and the pickups and, you know, the amount of lacquer on the outside. I mean, there's just, you know, the thickness of the neck. There's so much that has gone into this thought process or the planning for like, what am I hearing and how am I going to go about getting that sound, that I think we've kind of arrived at this moment now where that's,
I think it's cool. I think it's very cool, but I think it also, it not only speaks to your skill as a designer and luthier of an instrument, but also as a player, because the way you are then able to make ostensibly this very specific sound concept that you have in your head, the way you are able to actually sort of manifest that into a performance situation to where it still blends with an ensemble, to where it's still musical. You know, I think it's important to point out that no matter how specific or how sort of quote unquote custom this aesthetic or this sound is that you're hearing in your head that you are trying to get out on an instrument, fact of the matter is it's really in support of the music that you're enlisted to play.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, you do the same thing, right? Sure. You work for tons of people here in town and you know, we could sort of make a gross generalization about there are the guys that sort of do their thing, right? Yep. There's the, there's the Jimmy Vaughn, or there's the, you know, this whoever, right? One guy that has a thing that they do and they just do it so beautifully,
yes.
right?
Yep.
Then there's a whole bunch of guys here in town, like you and me, who work for lots of people,
sure.
right? And sometimes it's a blues gig, sometimes it's a jazz gig or whatever. And so that idea of like trying to find the right sound for the situation is a major interest of mine. I mean, really, like it's, you know, like my guitar heroes,
Yeah.
Right. I love Jimi Hendrix and I love Wes Montgomery and I love Jimmy Vaughn
and to just pause right there. I mean, like Jimi Hendrix and Wes Montgomery. I mean, all right. Polar extremes is far as sound and tone and style.
Right. But they what's interesting is those guys all had their own thing. And, you know, as I got older and started working as a professional musician, then I started to pay attention to people like Mike Campbell, who is a big hero of mine. And he's one of those guys that can walk into any situation, understand what is appropriate, you know, what the guitar's role is supposed to be in that moment. Right. And he can absolutely bullseye it every time. And again, I think this is kind of, you know, again, this is what I was maybe mentioning before, is this idea of building and how the instruments relate to my experience as a sideman and trying to be, mm-hmm. you know, be the uber supportive sideman, right?
Sure.
You know, not show up in, you know, spandex with a pink BC Rich on a jazz gig. You know what I mean?
Sometimes that's whatever it takes to get that check to clear, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, And so in terms of the Empress, we definitely covered a lot of sonic ground. And and to be honest, right, we did bust out my 330, you know, with the P90s, and we played that for a little bit, and then we played an acoustic guitar. But yeah, boy, you know, the Telecaster sure can cover a lot of ground.
For a piece such as this, because I feel I sprung something on you and the rest of the band that wasn't necessarily in everyone's prime comfort zone. I mean, as a band, we're used to seeing lead sheets with verse chorus form, and all of a sudden, first read through essentially, there's this 32 page score with a pretty minimal skeleton arrangement of what was required and what needed to happen. And how do you, I guess, can we go back? Because the first time we played this was in February of 2017. The first time we read it was January. Mm-hmm. When you first saw it, what are you thinking at that point?
Well, you know, you had a lot of things fleshed out.
Sure.
Chart wise, right? So we'll get past the music.
The necessities were there.
That's right. So, you know, beyond, you know, looking at the chart and actually reading the parts,
mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is the who I'm working with.
Sure.
So I'm fortunate that I have a history working with you and Steve and Aaron, right? And Johnny with the end, the first Prophets record. So I have an idea of what everybody's sort of musical bag is, mm-hmm. and their approach. I also think that, you know, I'm in a unique situation in that the guy that wrote it, you, really allows a lot of room for personal expression.
So
I feel safe.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Like making a personal decision about a sound or the approach.
Absolutely. So that was actually going to sort of dovetail into my next question then, because I don't know that we've actually fleshed this out between rehearsals or recording, but how much room was there? Or did you feel or perceive there to be for you to sort of, for Chris Bell to be Chris Bell, or were you totally married to the Pat Harris lines and I need to be faithful at all costs to this? Or I guess.
No, I mean, I really feel like there's a tremendous amount of room in there for me. you know, and there were a few times where, I remember specifically, we get to the waltz piece and I'm playing the melody. And I think there was a rehearsal where I kind of left the page and was playing the melody, phrasing the melody of my own.
Sure. Yes.
My own making. And you were like, that's it. Do that. Just, you know, however you want to play it. So I think there was a tremendous amount of room and space for me to operate. Like I don't recall any of the rehearsals where we had a situation where you were like, hey man, you know, can you rein that in a little bit?
Well, because personally, I don't remember like laying down any mandates in a rehearsal or recording situation, but most of that I was so jacked out of my mind on coffee and I'm like 8 steps ahead of where the band is trying to do some air traffic control or something that I guess that pleases me to hear that it wasn't a handcuff and hostage situation.
No.
Because I think ultimately when I go back and I'm listening to the mixes that we have and that we're currently working on, I really hear music being played despite so much of it being written down and codified. There's a real sense of performance and spontaneity even within the bounds that have been set.
Yeah. Well, I think when I talk about the guys that are on the record to other people, I often say that their default setting is one of listening, right?
Sure.
Oh, that, yes. That's what I love about playing in the Prophets is that sure, you know, we go and play rock songs or we're going to go and play this through composed piece. But really everybody's default setting is that they're listening.
And it's a very sympathetic group.
Very much so. Very much a, you know, like a real democracy in terms of working together, you know, and trying to figure out how are we going to make this successful in the moment. And everybody is listening in the moment at all times, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the deal, is that the moment I make a decision, I have the other guys in the room supporting that decision, right?
That's the best feeling in the world.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And so, you know, going back to that question is, I'm not feeling reined in at all.
Awesome. Yes.
Right?
Right.
In a way, I'm getting away with murder, right?
Right.
I don't have
right.
to do anything.
Just like, right?
If you were like, listen, you're going to have to do this.
If I miss that chord, Johnny's got 10 fingers. He's going to lay it out real fine.
That's right.
It's true. There's some truth in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think also, you get, you know what you get.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I do remember years ago, you and I were playing, we were working or something, and I think maybe when we first started working together, we had played a bunch of jazz gigs.
Oh, sure.
And then maybe I had played some of your original material, and you said something to me like, man, I really dig how like you always sort of had this like earthy thing going on, whether we're playing a jazz gig or whether we're playing, you know, a roots rock gig. And, you know, I might have laughed and made some sort of like self-deprecating comment about how
naturally
that's all I've got.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
yeah.
that's all I really do. But you know, again, like I think like people in the room, when I walk into the room, they kind of know what my thing is
too. I should hope so.
They're prepared for Chris is going to make these types of decisions. And you know what I mean? Just like I feel that way about you and Steve and Aaron and Johnny, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, like
there's a predictability.
And a real trust there that, you know, like I also appreciate everybody's decisions and they, you know.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Not to cut you off, but I think one of the strengths of the group, beyond any musicianship, is really the personalities that are in play, and the real lack of ego, and I just feel very fortunate to have sort of stumbled upon a working situation that I wish was working more, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But a situation where no one really has an agenda to tout. No one has to be anyone other than themselves.
It's an amazing situation for sure. And you know, of course, you and I have been part of situations, that's not the case.
Some less than amazing situations.
Right.
Just part of the gig. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll shout out to my buddy, David Hamburger, who came out to a gig of mine last Friday. And we had this conversation at the Brick where I think it was something like, "Hey, David, we got to play again together."
Yeah.
I just recall at some point sort of saying, "Look, man, I'm really only into playing situations where I play with people that I love to hang out with, mm-hmm. who are good musicians." And I think what's fun is the Prophets fit into that.
Oh, it's great.
Into that box, right? Like yes. Everybody in that band is like
I would call to get a coffee with them.
That's right. And it's a big thing, especially when you're in a situation where, doing a recording like The Empress, right? I mean, mm-hmm. yes, there were a lot of pages, right? There was a lot of written music, but there was also a lot of space. There was a lot of opportunity for interpretation, sure. right? And yes. you're letting the reins loose, right?
That's the goal. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not pulling back on it. So again, that personality thing mm-hmm. makes a tremendous difference when we're talking about putting together something that sounds like music.
Right.
Right.
So really quick, just to wrap up, because I don't want to sure. tie up your whole day.
Sure.
In this process of recording, was there or were there any sort of light bulb moments where perhaps you were expecting one thing to go down one route, or you're expecting one kind of thing, and then it surprised you in a good way, but in a way that was maybe wasn't in alignment with your expectations?
Can I spoil the recording for people who haven't listened
to it? Oh, sure.
Yeah,
go for it.
The movement, the sort of drunken German beer house movement.
Yeah, the second movement. So this is the second movement that Chris is talking about.
Was really a lot of fun.
And it was not something
that we had performed. Like when we played the piece live, right. we had a certain idea about how we were going to interpret that movement. But then all of a sudden, you know, here we are in the recording studio and we've got an idea and all of a sudden everybody sort of hops on board.
It was great.
And it was a tremendous amount of fun. It was really fantastic. We had a really good time. We ended up, recording a great piece of music.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely not what I anticipated.
I think that was, if memory serves me right, that was sort of an 11th hour suggestion from Aaron. Aaron Lack, who played drums on the end, but plays vibraphone singular on The Empress. And he's such a soft-spoken guy anyway. I think if I hadn't been 6 inches from his mouth, I would have missed it. But it was one of the things where it's like, man, we should really do like a vocal, you know. And once we did that, all of a sudden, and then we laid that in and we went back and redid all the solos.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably about 3 minutes of music that was really good, but all of a sudden came like really alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And it became this whole thing where it's like, yeah, man, that's just the best idea in the world. And I think,
should we go back and do all the other parts
like that? I think we just need to do everything like this. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. This is Pat Harris. I'm here with Chris Bell, guitarist and CEO of Bell Tower Guitars. Chris, if someone wants to check out your work, what's a website they can go to check it
out?
Sure.
BellTowerGuitars.com.
No hyphens or anything like that?
Just all one word.
www.BellTowerGuitars.com.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. And we also have a Facebook page, Bell Tower Guitars Facebook page. You can get in touch with me.
Wonderful.
That as well.
Wonderful. And we have been talking about The Empress recording with the Forgotten Prophets. All info on that can be found at www.theforgottenprophets.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you at a show sometime.